Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today, and happy celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. today, and I hope you all are having an enjoyable and safe holiday, but also keeping the reason for the holiday front and center in your minds and letting everybody know why we celebrate. It's not just another day off. In fact, if you're working, then you ought to count your blessings that you got a job right now, and especially if it's a good job, you might want to count your blessings. And part of the reason might be because of him fighting to make sure that we got equal footing and were able to get good jobs or better jobs. Anyway, thank you for being with us today. Third Monday of the month. That means we have Chef Z on with us. Good morning, Chef Z. How are you? Oh, no. Don't tell me she's not here. Uh-oh. Okay. Well, we have Chef Z on. I need to check in with her to see if she's going to join us today. Oh, by the way, on the second half of G's Power Hour today, we have Professor Julian Shambliss on. We've had him on before. He used to be at Rollins. Now he's not in Florida, but he keeps his Florida ties front and center. And we're going to talk a little bit about the MLK legacy. And I want to talk to him about what it means in light of the fact that in a couple of days we will be installing our next president and vice president, particularly the vice president, Kamala Harris. So anyway, the number, if you have a question or you want to call in, is 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Hi, I'm Tim Garris. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been two decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the Arklatex. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth, it's relaxing, it's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chillin'?
Well, welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. It is the third Monday of the month. And usually have Chef Z on. We talked. I know there was something that she did want to feature this Monday. And, next third Monday, next month, Black History Month, we're hoping to talk about some things with regards to that as well. The number is 516-387-1944. Maybe you have a recipe you want to share with us. But in the meantime, Wanted to find out if Chef C has joined us yet. Okay, no, she hasn't, unfortunately. Oh, my goodness gracious, I hope she's okay. I know she is a
very... Yeah, she's not on, Gretchen.
Oh, okay. Hi there, Madam CEO, how you doing?
I'm doing good, I'm doing good. I can give you about 5 or 10 minutes.
Okay, that is cool. So this is pre-recorded, by the way. You know, we got to take holidays too, y'all, okay? So,
amen.
At least we're trying. And my husband surprised me and told me he was off, you know, so I was like, oh, okay, well, so I'm sort of off. I still got to work tonight. So, but anyway, you're doing something special today. You want to talk about that?
Well, I am going to be working with food banks here in Columbia, South Carolina. And in conjunction with those food banks, we're going to provide vegetable boxes for free. And the vegetable boxes come with a gallon of milk. And a grocery box comes with that vegetable box with a ham and a turkey. And this is in conjunction with several grocery stores here in Columbia. They ask that I don't mention their names on radio. They want their own press release, but we'll have pictures and, you know, of course, probably be on the news later. But I'm excited about that. Now we're calling it food insecurity. We can call it whatever it is, but people are hungry. And there are some of us who have made it through the pandemic and still have the same amount of food on the table and have our homes and everything intact. But there are a lot of us who don't, and we have to help. And as my mother made us understand, it's okay. As a matter of fact, you should be proud to have a servant's heart. And so we are going
This is one of the things that I would like to see happen, and I guess I need to jump in and figure out a way to do it. But you know how I was talking to Robert Bowden on Friday about now the laws in Florida, which are allowing people to not just have to have a lawn, but you can actually have an edible, you know, lawn where you can plant vegetables and stuff. And, you know, I keep running in my mind and I can't remember where the chapter and verse or where it comes from, but about teaching a man to fish. And so I would like, you know, I like the giveaways and stuff, but I would like to see some people taking the time to lend their knowledge about planting gardens to other people so that they can not necessarily have to depend on the grocery store and not necessarily depend on a giveaway if they know how to grow the stuff themselves. I would also like to see more people teach other people about fishing. You know, in my mind, I still think of it as something the old folks do. But, I mean, seriously, I mean, or it's a competitive sport. And I think really that we need to get out there and teach some of these kids about fishing, the ones that don't know. I don't know how many kids. I don't know any kids really that go fishing. You know,
and you're probably right about that, unless they, you know, are hanging on to those grandfathers and fathers that are out there that just love it as a sport. My mother, when she retired from teaching and being a principal, she was fishing every Saturday and sometimes on Sunday. And I said, Mom, we can't leave the Lord alone to go back to the lake. But my mother did that, and she loved to fish. And just think about back in our era, because I think we're along the same age, when you didn't have a whole lot of other stuff, there was some fish in the freezer, and fish and grits could serve you and all the kids in your house for the night or the morning or for the week. And Reverend Robinson says that's why he didn't eat fish now, is because he grew up on fish and grits when things were tight. you know. And I remember my parents fishing a lot during the summer and even sometimes in the wintertime, and they would come back with a cooler full. And they would come back and they would get on the phone and said, hey, we caught about 80 fish today. We're going to drop some by. And, you know, and they got that call sometimes. And I remember, you know, we had a farm with hundreds of cattle, and we would kill a hog or a cow, and, hey, you know, we have all of this. Let me share some. And I remember families doing that back in the day. But I agree with you that we need to do more of the growth rather than, you know, counting on a giveaway box or basket. There's a group here in Columbia, South Carolina, Judy Etheridge. She actually, you know, works with the group, and they grow different vegetables, and then you bring them in and do different things with them. I need to get them on your radio show. They have really taken it to the next level with how they're growing fresh vegetables and talking about wellness and how to make that work for you. So, for sure. But I do understand where you're coming from, for sure, on how we need to teach a man to fish and provide for himself.
Yes. And, I mean, and my thing is, if you want to give away something, sponsor a fishing license, because one of the things that I didn't remember coming up, and I guess I didn't really know, that you got to pay for a fishing license now in order to fish, unless, you know, you have a cane pole. That's my understanding. And a lot of people don't use cane poles. I don't even know. I had a couple of cane poles I kept just for nostalgia's sake because, you know, my folks had some, but, you know, they went to the reeling rod. And so, you know, my thing is buy somebody a fishing license and maybe some fishing equipment and then take them out. Or have somebody take them out or whatever to teach them how to fish. You know, get them started.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Get them started. I agree with you. And I think I'm going to have to investigate. I'm going to do some research on that and see what programs are out there, because there are a lot of, you know, turn your backyard into, you know, a mini farm, or turn, you know, a part of your land into, you know, where you can farm and harvest from your own ground. There are a lot of those places out there, and they're really teaching us. I thought you had one on your show at one time, but I definitely.
Yeah.
Yep. That's
farming.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
You know, I'm
we
a
need
big
to get them back.
Farming.
We need to get them back. They were so good. They inspired me. To do, but we need
me
to
too.
Do. More of that. And I really want to, and I waited too long because Small Business Saturday is in November, but I really want to do a Small Business Month where we just get those people that are within, you know, small businesses to talk about what their small business is and what they're doing, not necessarily in nonprofits, and how they're struggling during this pandemic, or if, you know, they've been able to get a PPP loan or application, or, you know, some of that. We need to do some of that, and I'm gonna spearhead that for sure.
Yeah, and one of the things I would like to do for whenever we do this small business thing, maybe we can just take some time during November, maybe a week, and focus on the small business. But one of the things I want to encourage these businesses to do, especially some of our businesses, we don't like to get entangled in the minutiae of things in terms of getting the licenses, getting the insurance, and all of the thing, you know, doing the business plan and stuff like that. And, you know, it's a little bit daunting, a little bit, you know, some people are apprehensive about getting all of that stuff taken care of. And what I would like to do maybe is to do some sort of workshop on the show where we, you know, tell people, okay, this is the legalese behind it. This is what you need to do. This is how much it's going to cost. But this is what makes your business legit, because people are, you know, shying away from businesses that don't have all of this in place. You know,
oh, yeah.
So that's,
and people shy away from it that are in business, like a John Robinson Maintenance, you know, what he does. You know, he's LLC, you know, he has everything that he needs, you know, to run. But people shy away from, you know, paying quarterly taxes or making sure that they file on time or even just, you know, having a logo or having a business email or, you know, there's so many small things that makes your business flow but also makes your business legit. And you got to have that, you know,
right.
And you can't have an LLC and you don't have a tax ID. Well, what's your EIN number? And some, and for those who are, you know, 50th, 60th, 70th, the computer, then, you know, people shy away from that. And I was just about to write a curriculum for a class at our church to do this, you know. I now show people just how to get their computer. You know, older people might get a computer for Christmas, but they don't know how to load it or, you know, or to get it ready. And it's not that hard. But, you know, I had to come up with a fee for that because I was, you know, going from people's home where people were dropping off their laptop to me. I would keep it overnight and turn it back. You're ready to go, you know. You have an – or even an email.
And that's what may need to happen. You know, for example, let's say you're a painter, but you're not a good business person. So you need to say, I'm going to paint, but I need to hire you to do these things for me. But now that this is the thing, this kind of go back.
Hey, Gretchen, I'm going to have to go. I'm sorry.
Oh,
I'm going to have to go. My doctor's calling. Take over.
Okay. And Chef C had a bit of an emergency, but we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, and then we're also soon going to talk to Professor Chambliss about you know, the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King. This is G's Power Hour. I never had it so good entertainment. If you have questions, the number is 516-387-1544. G's Power Hour. I never had it so good entertainment. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Tim Garris. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been two decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the Arglitz. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on K-Ham Radio.
Are you?
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Today we celebrate the legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. today. Actually celebrating all weekend as Friday was his birthday. We had hoped to have Chef Z on for a few minutes because it is also third Thursday on G's Power Hour, so, and we always try to have Chef Z on, so we're going to try to get her back on maybe later in the week. But in the meantime, coming up, we do have Professor Julian Chambliss on to talk with us about the King legacy. Just also tomorrow coming up, we are talking with NY Nethery of the Zora Neale Hurston Museum in Eatonville. You know, they usually have the Zora Neale Hurston Festival every year. It's going to be a little bit different. But one of the things I like is that they've expanded it where it's not just the festival. It's a little bit more than that. It's a little more educational. It's just a really good opportunity for youth and adults to learn a little bit more about Black history and culture. And so it's always a good time. You know, so this month, I guess we kind of start Black History Month a little early between MLK and the Zora Festival, and then going into Black History Month. So always special time here. The number is 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944. Also coming up is Faith Friday, the fourth Friday of the month. So if you have some faith questions that you want us to talk about, just hit me up on the G's Power Hour Facebook page. I would love to have you, you know, give us some ideas in terms of what your concerns are with regarding to faith. But while I have a few minutes before Professor Shambliss comes on, I wanted to maybe just encourage you to take some time to check your credit. I know this is coming out of left field, but, you know, the interest rates right now are so very low. I can't help it, but I've got to talk a little bit about some real estate right now since I've got a minute. The interest rates, I think, are, what, 2.6%? And just because of the schedules and whatnot, wasn't able to get Jabir on for Mortgage Monday this month. We are definitely having him on next month. But wanted to talk a little bit about preparing for a home purchase. June is National Home Ownership Month. I am sure that there are some of you out there that by the time June comes, you could probably be in a new house or have some new investment property. So one of the things that I would start with is just making sure your credit house is in order. You know, are you paying your bills on time? If you're not, you know, no time like the present to get started. Make sure you're paying your bills on time. And there's no sin in paying them early. Do you have the right credit lines? And that's what you need to find out. I mean, just having a credit card sometimes is not enough. So, and if you have a credit card, how many of them do you have? How often are you using them? Are you paying them with any type of regularity or frequency? So making sure that you pay your credit cards and everything on time. And if you have way too many credit cards, you know, pay them down. Pay that interest rate down. If you've got, let's say, 5 credit cards, do you really need 5 credit cards? The one with the highest interest rate, start by trying to pay that off. That would be the first thing you need to do. If you are thinking about selling your house, you know, because I know I talk a lot about buying. Sellers, you know, this is your time to start. You don't have to wait till spring to do the spring cleaning, especially if you're thinking about selling soon. It's a great time to start decluttering. It's a great time to maybe freshen up the paint, update the landscaping a little bit. If you have windows that are blocked by way too much shrubbery, get those windows cleared out. You know, you want to make it safe. You want to also be able to let some sunlight into the house. Great vitamin D. In Florida we have air conditioning a lot. I'm an air conditioner addict. But every now and then you have to open up the windows. So open up the windows maybe tomorrow or the next day or whatever. Get some fresh air circulating through the house, you know, and then close them, you know. If you have allergies, I know sometimes that might be an issue. But you do need to kind of balance it out, not just have the air conditioning. Make sure also, too, and we talked a little bit about that when we had John Robinson on, make sure that you are changing your AC filters on a regular basis, especially if you have carpet, and I have carpet, but no matter what, or you have pets, but change the filters regularly in the house. If you have a home with a septic system, you know, I have seen and witnessed where a lot of these septic systems have gone out, and you know, the yard is dug up, and they're having to redo the drain field or the tank or whatever. Make sure that you're keeping it maintained by putting, you know, the Riddex in the system. to make sure that you're keeping that system properly managed. Plumbing is an issue that we're actually having an issue with right now, and we're thinking about getting a house repiped. If you have an older home, you might want to look at that, getting a house repiped. If you have a fireplace, that's another thing. And I know a lot of people in Florida don't have fireplaces or don't use fireplaces. We actually love our fireplace. But you've got to make sure that that is kept in order, too, and there's no, you know, parts where, you know, cracks or anything where the flames can get to other places where they don't and don't need to be and cause a fire. So, you know, the home maintenance should be high on your list as a homeowner, but especially if you are planning on selling soon. If you have a pool, that's another thing. Make sure, even if you're not using the pool on a regular basis, make sure that the pH balance is correct in the pool. You're not developing a lot of algae in the pool. You're not getting a lot of bugs in the pool. Make sure it's covered. If you don't have it in a screened patio, also make sure that your pump is working regularly and properly, and it might be trying to change it out or get it updated. The air conditioning system right now, even though you're not, may not be using a lot of AC, you may be using some heat. We've had some chilly days. Next week is going to be worse. Well, I shouldn't say next week. This week is going to be a little worse than some days. And I know we're trying to figure out what's going on with our AC because it tends to run and not do the automatic on and off. And maybe it's just because it's been colder than usual, or maybe there's an issue. But make sure that you have the right system. By the way, if you're getting a house built, to say this, if you're getting a house built, and a lot of houses are doing this anyway, but make sure you have enough, I guess, units to cover both floors. Like if you have a two-story house, if you have one unit trying to heat or cool a whole house, you may be overworking it, and that's what causes you to do more damage to your system and not effectively heat or cool your house. So please just make sure that. If you're getting a house built, make sure that you have two units, and that's something that I would not have thought about ever. I have a two-story house now. Wish I had two units already in there, but, just trying to make the use of that best use of what I have. And so in order to enhance what I have right now, you know, there's fans. I didn't have ceiling fans when I first moved in there. I have 6 ceiling fans in there now, and also space heaters. But just be careful with the space heaters and where you're using them and how often you're using them, where they're plugged into. These are some things that I want you all to kind of think about as you are, doing the house maintenance. And if you're considering selling your house maybe at some point, you don't want to end up doing a lot of stuff at the last minute. That's very important because there's too much going on when you're trying to buy or sell a house to try to do a lot of these things at the last minute. So the number here is 516-387-1944. If you have any questions or something you want to comment on today as we celebrate the holiday of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we will have Professor Julian Chambliss on to help us out. And then, like I said, Chef Z had a family emergency, so she couldn't be with us today. But hopefully we can get her on for maybe later in the week. So we just have to see how things go. But, you know, keep her in prayer. And we should keep each other in prayer as we go through this transitional period this week with the inauguration. This is G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. And we will be right.
This is Douglas Dobbs, owner and funeral director at Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community with 2 generations of family funeral service. With the recent addition of my son Brandon, we are here to take care of the needs of Central and West Orlando. From simple cremation to a full burial, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here to help you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720, Dobbs. dedicated to serving our families.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar. Or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being on with us today. It is the third Thursday. The third Monday. It's not even Thursday. It's the third Monday of the month on G's Power Hour. And we usually have Chef Z. We're going to try to get Chef Z back later on in the week, hopefully. In the meantime, we're having Professor Julian Chambliss on with us today to talk a little bit about the legacy of the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And good afternoon. How are you, Professor?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. Thank you so much. It's a joy to have you on again. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too.
So we, as I said, not just today, but this weekend, we are, you know, in celebration mode of the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And, you know, there's all types of, usually anyway, it would be, you know, a little bit more full blown, I guess you could say, with parades and stuff like that. With COVID, I'm sure a lot of stuff is tamed down, but that doesn't mean that we forget what he accomplished in the groundwork that he set for us. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about how we should be honoring him at this time, especially with so much that has gone on over the past year.
Yeah, that's a really important question to ask. I do think that when we talk about Dr. King, we tend to misremember who he was. And I can talk to students about this because Martin Luther King was not a very popular man through most of his life, especially in the context of his work in civil rights. And in hindsight, you know, he's won the historical debate, but the legacy that he had as an activist who was in the street and challenged structures that he believed were unequal and unfair and degrading the human life, I think that lesson probably resonates more today than it has in many a year, in part because we have had so many protests coming out this season of pandemic and sort of the situation where we've been unable to turn away from the reality of systemic inequality. And so the protests that we've had over those last few months and the debate that we've had, especially in the context, you know, what is it that we expect our political process to deliver to us? They have new resonance. They resonate in a very different way, I think, this holiday, because I think Martin Luther King would say that the work both in the street and in the state house are connected. The values that define policy should be centered on human dignity and people's health and safety. And the politicians and leaders that refuse to acknowledge that or refuse to act on that are not leaders that you should support. And so the lesson offered by Dr. King, both in terms of the work that he did and even at a pivotal moment at the time of the assassination, his emphasis on the poor and on downtrodden, on the people basically left behind in the system, these seem to be legacies that a new generation of people young people as they have taken up. And so it's an interesting moment to think about Dr. King and the legacy of his work. Hello?
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar, or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. I have Professor Julian Shambliss on to talk about the legacy of the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. And I had accidentally muted myself. That's why you didn't hear my question, Professor. So, yeah, me and technology, we get along real great. But what I was asking is, how do you think, what do you think he would think of, and how do you think his legacy has impacted what's happening in the next couple of days with the inauguration, but more specifically, the installation of Senator Kamala Harris as Vice President of the United States?
You know, I think that one of the things that Martin Luther King never shied away from was looking towards the government and the United States to live up to the policies that it said that it had, right? That it believed in, that the way the law is supposed to be applied. One of the things that electoral politics and civil society, the burden that we sometimes feel related to that, especially when we're marching in the streets, that things do not change fast enough. And when we think about this in the long view, the work that Martin Luther King did in terms of voting rights, the work that groups like the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, Congress of Racial Equality, those groups, CORE, SNCC, SDLC, those groups, they marched in the street, but they also stressed the importance of citizenship, the importance of exercising the right to vote. And I think at some level, the coarsening of the public, the civil society, is not a surprise that that has come with, like, the effort to repeal, like, voting right legislation or suppress people's ability to vote. And you know, it takes a tremendous effort. I'm going to think about the case of the success in Georgia, like two first Jewish American, first African American senator. And then when you think about someone like Kamala Harris, that is in fact a manifestation of a kind of grassroots big tent politics that a Democratic Party, that we can trace back in a Democratic Party to period in the 1950s and the 1960s, really starting probably with the New Deal and like a series of Democratic sort of coalition-based governments, which weave together the poor, the working poor, the rural poor, you know, these people that were looking for the government to deliver on its promises. So there's an element of Vice President-elect Harris that, you know, a direct legacy of desegregation and political participation. And there's also a kind of real, at the moment, political debate about, you know, what are the ideas, what is the ideology that defines the Democratic Party? And, you know, are they going to be able to live up to that? And I'm always intrigued to see Joe Biden as a sort of old school Democrat based on a kind of transactional logic in politics, sort of acknowledge that in a very real way with picking people of color, right? I would argue he didn't have a choice when it came to his vice president. It could only really have been Kamala Harris, realistically, but that doesn't change the fact that he is doing it, right? Like he's doing the business of politics in a kind of classic form. So, you know, are we going to continue to do the work as individuals to make that sort of transactional politics work, right? That is a question, but it's definitely, again, legacies that we can trace back to moments that we know well.
I want to ask you about accountability. And, you know, it seems to me that when there were issues that would come up, Dr. King and some of his colleagues and allies would move to make sure that certain people in power were held accountable for the things that were done against the community of color. And these days, who really, I think one of the things I think that helps, to be honest, is the fact that technology has given everybody a camera in their hand through their phone, and so that's the accountability in one way. But at the same time, even though we have these videos and we have these pictures, and people seem to be looking out a little bit more or calling for action a little bit more, even with calls to action, we have instances where no one's really being held accountable, especially when it comes to law enforcement, I think. We look at things like Jacob Blake. We look at Breonna Taylor. And, you know, we look at the incident in Wisconsin. And it just seems that even though there are pictures out there, even though there's audio out there, even though there's eyewitness accounts out there, people are still seeming not to be, they're not being held accountable truly. It seems like it's more the court of public opinion rather than some legal accountability. How do we do that? How do we make sure that justice is being served properly?
You know, that's a challenge that goes back to structures that I think we as citizens perhaps don't engage in enough, right? So, and I think you're right that we have more access at some level to a kind of public square, right? We can see when things are going wrong. But let's think about the nature of mass action. Today, you can think of something like Black Lives Matter as mass action, but it is that. But it's also lots of smaller groups that are acting in mass, right? There's a platform that everyone kind of sort of agrees upon, but there are real differences, like because every place is not the same. And I think one of the things that made previous generation social, political effort at some level, I use air quotes here, easier, is that what they were trying to do was very clear, right? The spaces they were trying to get into, the things they were asking for, the measurement of success was very, very clear. And having achieved those successes, their critique actually became more sophisticated, and society's ability to respond, part. I mean, I think you can make the argument that when Black people started talking about structural racism in the 70s, that's when the sort of like real danger being posed by the civil rights movement for a lot of white people became very clear. Previous efforts to like, I want to eat a lunch counter, that was not unreasonable. And it didn't really change, realistically, it didn't change the substance of people's lives, even though they, you know, held very strongly to white supremacy. When you started talking about the nature of like a kind of systemic anti-blackness in hiring or access to capital or, you know, the sort of invisible structures of society, as black people often do, that's much harder. And it also, it's easier for people to be like, I'm not responsible for this system that privileges me based on my skin. And so the challenge for black people today is to organize and operate in a three-dimensional way. And that three-dimensional way can borrow, I think, from historical kinds of protests, like boycotts. Like we don't necessarily do enough with boycotts. Actually, I would argue, because money is really important to corporations. And you can see one of the things that's growing out of recent sort of political unrest in the Capitol is that a lot of corporations have said, we're not going to give money to politicians. And more than anything, this has made them pause because they're like, I need money. And so, and corporations are like, we need our brand to be relatively clean. And if you're involved in an insurrection, you're bad for the brand. And boycotts were very common during the civil rights era. I mean, boycotting public transportation, boycotting products that are really racist. I mean, there were organizations where, like, that kind of very public element around boycotts were championed by groups like NAACP and so on and so forth. So, like, economic pressure and then legal pressure, right? The effort to take people to court, to ensure that the full weight and vigor of the law in terms of individual rights and community rights is being pursued. And the ways that people achieve that, again, there were organizations, be they like labor organizations or community organizations, that were, you know, often at the heart of that. And that model kind of exists, but it's more filtered. And we might want to think about how these sort of broad desire to improve society might be broken down into a set of actions that are more legalistic. Like, are you showing up to vote? Like, you have to show up to vote not just simply on the presidential election, but you kind of have to show up to vote all the way down to the school board, because the school board does things like pick books, and books tell people stories about race, or not tell people stories about race, to be quite frank. And so there's a set of engagements around how society operates that people of color and people of good conscience, because they're, you know, involved in their lives, you know, what can they do to sort of like engage with these things? These are real questions. And like, I often talk to students about, like, you know, you have to show up not just simply at the moments where you're most upset, but also sometimes at the moments where, like, you're not really upset, but you want to make sure that the system is going to deliver in a value framework that you believe in. And so, like, that accountability question really becomes, like, well, how do you believe society is supposed to operate, and what are the four or five things that you might do, not like when things are bad, but like literally every month, that are going to make that happen. And that's a mindset that's a lot more complicated when you don't have a Jim Crow sign right in front of you, right? When it's more complicated set of like societal ills that you're trying to manage. And so educating yourself about the things that are important to you, thinking about where you can be engaged at the local level. I mean, politics remains very local, and I think it's important for people to remember that. But then, you know, where are you spending your money, right? You know, everyone who has a job can, and they have 401k, can go and say, hey, I want my money. Quite frankly, I want my money to be invested in X. And if you get enough of your colleagues to say, hey, we want to put our investment, our retirement money into, like, you know, socially responsible corporations, like, are any of these corporations that are supporting someone who's voting to say, like, you know, Joe Biden is not president? I don't want my money in that. I mean, that may seem simple, or you might like that won't matter, but if enough people do it, it will matter. And so there's just like a consistency in terms of engagement that's very important. And I think it's got even more important as we get into this whole high tech world, because the balkanization represented by we're all having these sort of separate conversations may at some level obscure us from the system that are undermining the things that we say we want.
So now, who do you see in your mind, in your vision, as the next person, the next Dr. King, or the next leader of the community? Or do we need just one leader? And also, if we had a leader, would people this day and age listen or follow? Because the dynamics seem to have changed a little bit, especially with a lot of our younger people who I think things are just so not great, but so good for them, so acceptable for them, that they may not see a need for the advancement of certain causes in our community. So how do you get people to understand that there's still work that needs to be done? And who do you think is the person or persons to lead the charge?
That this question of, like, you know, are young people engaged? They are. I think that's one of the questions about structure. Like, where are they engaged is the question, not if they are engaged, right? And so that's a question. I think you can often find young people are very concerned with things that they recognize are detrimental to the future. That's why they're very concerned about climate change. That's why they're very concerned about police brutality. They are very concerned about those things. And so, you know, creating an avenue for their concern to be expressed in policy that you're pursuing, if you're involved in sort of like institutional practice, becomes really important. To this question of who's the leader, you know, I honestly believe that one of the things that we forget is how many leaders there were during the civil rights movement. That it was very grassroots movement. So there's for every person whose name you know, there's like 10 people whose name you don't know. But they did a lot of stuff wherever they were, right? And so I think the nature of the difference between now and then is that the groups that were doing stuff on the ground had some tenuous connection to some sort of overarching body that you did know the leader of. Like, this is the thing about Martin Luther King. Everyone knows Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King was part of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. So when he showed up, though, he was showing up and helping out often a group of people who'd been working for years and decades, you know, years and years at a place.
Uh-huh.
And if you look at the pictures, those people are there. So now we're in a situation where that sort of hyper-local work can get amplified on social media, but it doesn't necessarily get connected as it was in the past to national people. You can know that there are protests in Detroit. You can know that there are protests in Charleston. You can know that protests in such a place. You know there are protests about the same thing, but there's nobody who is organizing all the, it's not a little, you know, there's not a person where people, reporters can go to and say, what does these protests mean? I think the closest thing you have to that right now is someone like Stacey Abrams, who's emerged as a national leader, the leaders of the Black Lives Matter movement. Those women are really strong, articulating. what the movement stands for, and they do have a platform. I think that translate into cooperative structures, right? Is the Black Lives Matter movement connecting to the minimum wage or living wage movement, which it should, right? Because at some level, the people who are not making that living wage are often Black people. So if you connected those two things together in an organized way, pressing for a living wage across municipalities in the United States, connecting that to the Black Lives Movement and talking about how, well, you'd have some of this money to give people a living wage or universal income if you weren't spending so much money on assault weapons for the police, right? So defunding the police doesn't mean there's no police. It just simply means they don't get to buy a tank because they don't need a tank. They're not in Afghanistan, right? So there's a way where some of the hot-button issues, they are connected. And they're connected to the bodies and experience of people of color. And seeing that and working in tandem, that really becomes the work of the people who are, like, deeply committed. Like, do you get in a room with those people and find common cause with them, right? Like, we all can point to figures in the past that rose to prominence in part because of their ability to reach across the aisle. I mean, I think about someone like Fred Hampton and the Black Panther Party and the work that he did reaching out to white people, white working class people in Chicago. It's not just simply that before he was killed and things like that. So there's lots of historical examples where we can point to the importance of weaving together people's concerns in terms of, like, making society more equitable. And if we're not doing that, we're missing an opportunity. And like I say, I think that there are some figures who are doing it around very particular movements. Like, you know, Stacey Abrams did an amazing job turning out the vote in Georgia and has really been an inspiration to a lot of people. The Democratic Party is a political party. Is it sort of have the same strength that it used to have around some of these sort of ideological issues that matter so much, the working poor? There are huge questions around that. And so, yeah, it's difficult. I think it's difficult for me to identify like a single person that emerges. And I wonder about the danger of putting all your hopes into a single person, because when that person passes away or is assassinated or so on, you know, do the ideas that they champion lose themselves? And I think that that's also a cautionary tale about the class civil rights movement and the sense that people have of loss and lost momentum when these charismatic leaders pass away or are killed.
And we're about out of time, and I think I need to have you back because there's a question that I have, and that is, we see other communities getting their agendas noticed and acted upon. The Hispanic community is very strong in terms of getting their issues front and center and acted upon. And even some other Black communities, like maybe the Haitian community or West Indian community, are very good about coming together as a community and getting the issues. Our community seems to have fallen apart a little bit. So I do want to talk about that. Maybe if you could come back maybe and address that and see why is it that we can't come together and get our issues, you know, dealt with, you know, get immediate action instead of having them pushed to the side. So, but thank you for your time today. Really appreciate it.
No problem. And I'll come back at some point and we can talk about that very complicated issue. I will say, I will leave you that the Black community, and I use air quotes when I say Black community, doesn't come together. that is a complicated one, but I do think it is one that speaks to questions about class and questions about expectations around activism that are really complicated. So I think there's a generational gap that's really important to understand. And that's something to consider, right? Like, so, you know.
Right.
When you
we'll talk about that.
Who's not coming together? Yeah.
We'll have to talk about that the next time. But thank you so much for taking the time out. You have a blessed day and be well and be safe, okay?
I will. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you all for listening. This has been G's Power Hour. I never had it so good entertainment. Be well, be safe, be blessed, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.